from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, Attorney General William Barr was on Capitol Hill today before the House Judiciary Committee, where part of his testimony was focused on what Chairman Jerry Nadler called a myth, the violence in Portland. We'll be joined by the Acting Secretary of Homeland Security, Chad Wolf, who'll give us the latest on the Portland myth and why he is sending more resources to counter the lawlessness taking place there. And knowing what is behind those who are behind the violence and lawlessness that have enveloped the streets of Portland and other major cities is critical, as leaders from corporate boardrooms to church pulpits have aligned themselves with Black Lives Matter. Is their cause police brutality and racial justice, or are those just convenient slogans for some? Former Cincinnati Mayor and Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell answers that question. Also, what do we need to know about the philosophy and tactics of Black Lives Matter, Antifa, and the others behind the attacks on all things America, our flag, our history, our anthem? Or should I say, what do you need to know that the social media giants do not want you to know and therefore have removed? Like the information from author and executive director of Fixed Point Foundation, Larry Taunton. He won't be censored here. He joins us later. And speaking of censorship, the new gatekeepers of public discourse removed the top-performing Facebook post from Monday. The post, which had more than 17 million views, was an event in D.C. with a group of medical doctors responding to the current situation with the coronavirus. Facebook's explanation of why they censored the post is telling. We'll talk about it. The censorship and the content of the event with Dr. Taryn Clark, one of the doctors who was a part of yesterday's presentation. And finally, we'll get an update from the U.S. Senate on the next wave of government action in response to the coronavirus with Oklahoma Senator James Lankford. A lot to cover here on this edition of Washington Watch. Hey, let me remind you, I can't remind you because I haven't told you yet. Stand Courageous, the men's conference. We're back. August the 15th, we're holding a one-day event in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. But here's the good news. No matter where you are, you can participate. It's going to be live streamed. All you have to do is register. To find out more, we'll have information later at TonyPerkins.com. And let me thank all of those who responded to yesterday's poll question. Second highest response of any of our polls. 99% of you said as violent and lawless protesters are working to turn America toward a Marxist country, you said you'll join the protests for America and commit to pray for America, for our nation, vote in November, and stand for the truth. So thank you for participating in that. I'll have a question for you today a little bit later. By the way, tomorrow morning, I invite you to join me. I'll be on Daystar TV with Marcus and Joni Lamb in Dallas. So tune in if you watch them, Daystar TV with Marcus and Joni. All right, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jerry Nadler of New York, recently claimed the violence in Portland was a myth. Well, today, Nadler's committee, the House Judiciary Committee, held a hearing in which the Attorney General of the United States, William Barr, testified. The details of this myth were front and center as Ohio Congressman Steve Shabbat asked the AG a question about Portland.
Mr. Attorney General, would it be accurate to say that it's this administration's responsibility, and of course you're part of the administration, to see that federal laws are upheld and that the federal property is secure and safe and protected? Is that correct?
That's right, Congressman. They're sort of distinct missions. One mission is to enforce federal law. The other is protecting federal property, and specifically U.S. courthouses, which are the heart of federal property in all 93 jurisdictions in the United States. And we have the obligation to protect federal courts, and the U.S. Marshals specifically have been given that obligation. Federal courts are under attack. Since when is it okay to try to burn down a federal court? If someone went down the street to the Prettyman Court here, that beautiful courthouse we have right at the bottom of the hill, and started breaking windows and firing industrial-grade fireworks in to start a fire, throw kerosene balloons in and start fires in the court, is that okay? Is that okay now? No, the U.S. Marshals have a duty to stop that and defend the courthouse, and that's what we are doing in Portland. We are at the courthouse defending the courthouse. We're not out looking for trouble.
Thank you, General. And as far as weapons and devices that were utilized by the group of people, and you mentioned trying to destroy the courthouse. I mean, they were literally trying to burn it down and apparently didn't give a hoot about the people that were occupied in the building as well. So people were in danger.
Is absolutely right.
So as far as the weapons that you mentioned, let me get this straight. My understanding is that the people attacking the building had, among other things, rifles, explosives, knives, saws, sledgehammers, tasers, slingshots, rocks, bricks, lasers. Have I missed anything, or does that about cover it?
You have missed some things, but that's a good list.
Joining us now is the Acting Secretary of Homeland Security, Secretary Chad Wolf. Mr. Secretary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks, Tony. Appreciate you having me on.
So, Mr. Secretary, I'm going to jump right into the heart of this. Is the violence in Portland a myth?
Absolutely not. We see it going on for over 55 days, straight days in a row. Very, very violent activity, late at night, early in the morning. We see all of the weapons that you just highlighted in that segment. We see that and more. We see power tools, and we see accelerants. We see commercial-grade fireworks. We see a variety of weapons and tactics being used against the federal courthouse there and against our law enforcement officers. We have over around 190 law enforcement officer injuries since July 1st. So this idea that it is peaceful protesting, we do see that in Portland. We support that. But that's not what occurs in the early morning hours of every single day. We see very, very violent activity. Again, we're going to stay there. We're going to continue to protect that courthouse. And we continue to urge state and local leaders and law enforcement to do their job, to hold these people accountable. These individuals are congregating and assembling on city streets and in city parks, and they don't have a right to do that. But city officials need to hold them accountable.
Mr. Secretary, some have claimed that the protests in Portland were peaceful until the Department of Homeland Security expanded its presence and investigated the violence there.
Yeah, again, inaccurate. So thanks for bringing that up, Tony. What you hear in the news media a lot is very inaccurate statements, and they have all been debunked one way or another. So the vast majority of DHS law enforcement personnel arrived after the mayor made a statement in early July indicating that the violence in Portland had been ongoing for more than a month and that groups continue to target the Justice Center and other buildings and the attacks undermine public safety. That's a quote from the mayor. So that assertion is true before DHS arrived, and it's certainly true after DHS arrived. And again, this idea that simply enforcing federal law and holding criminals accountable is somehow inciting violence is a false statement, in my view, and completely inaccurate and misleading.
Well, I guess, Mr. Secretary, the response from their perspective would be we no longer enforce laws in the country? Would that eliminate violence?
That seems to be. It seems to be what they are suggesting, particularly as it relates to the federal facility, the federal courthouse there in Portland, as well as the protection of our officers. So the idea and really the atmosphere that has been fostered there in Portland is you can have a violent criminal come up to the fence line that we have put up outside the courthouse there in Portland. You can have them do any number of violent activities. You can have them throw a Molotov cocktail. You can have them throw a firework, a commercial-grade firework, at a law enforcement officer's head or a laser and try to put it in their eyes and then step back across the street on city property and say, you can't do anything to me. We reject that notion. You have to hold people accountable. In every other city across America, it is the state and local law enforcement that help us do that job. We don't see that yet in Portland, and we're going to continue to, again, protect that courthouse, and we are making arrests. We've made over 75 arrests since the beginning of July, and we'll continue to do that to hold the criminals that are doing this accountable.
Mr. Secretary, let me ask you about that, because some have claimed that these are unidentified federal officers who are arresting people in Portland, meaning they have no uniform, no identification on.
Thanks again, Tony. So again, another myth that certain news organizations like to portray because it's easy for them. It's a talking point. We have debunked that myth again. We have put out pictures of the uniforms that DHS wears. We are a uniform department and have a number of agencies that are uniformed. They are different uniforms for the different missions that they do. FPS is a blue uniform, very similar to that you would see to traditional law enforcement. But we have other uniforms. But regardless of the uniforms, they say police on the front and the back. They have a DHS patch on them, usually on their shoulder, that identifies them, not only DHS, but which agency within DHS. So it's very clearly visible, marked, and we identify ourselves. And I would just say, these are individuals that have been, DHS law enforcement, have been out there, again, for 56, 57 straight nights, in some cases. And the instigators, the criminals, the violent opportunists know exactly who this are. So this idea that they don't know who law enforcement is, again, is just completely inaccurate.
Now, Mr. Secretary, you have described this as kind of well-organized, well-coordinated criminal acts of violence. I mean, this cannot be considered peaceful protest. I mean, this to me appears to be domestic terrorism.
I would agree. It's absolutely not peaceful. In no circumstance that what occurs, again, early morning of every day is peaceful outside of that courthouse. To be clear, there are some peaceful protests ongoing in Portland, but they happen different time, different location. Again, no issues with that. It's the violent activity. And again, it goes back, and we had a problem in Portland back in 2018 when we had an ICE office laid siege to for over 28 days, where again, Portland police, local leadership there did nothing to support us in trying to get people in and out of that facility. Again, we had to send in federal assets to relieve that facility. So it's an environment that they foster there. They don't enforce local or state laws. And what we've seen is now that it has gone well beyond peaceful protesting, it's gone into a violent state, and it continues to go out of control. The violent activity continues to again, spiral out of control each and every night.
Now, Mr. Wolf, I know that you've been in Homeland Security in federal office for a long time, serving under different administrations. You're not a novice. You understand the criminal mind. You understand security. If the federal government just withdrew resources from cities like Portland and other places where federal property is under attack, what would be the outcome?
Well, there in Portland, I know the outcome. The building would burn overnight. It's their stated intent. They've actually spray painted it on the side of the courthouse itself. And of course we see it on social media as well. So we have witnessed what they have tried to do. They have taken down portions of the fence when it was, before it was buttressed. They've taken down portions of the fence. They've tried to wrap the fence, light it on fire, and then barricade the front door. Obviously that's a danger to all the individuals inside that courthouse. So we know what their intent is, and if we were to withdraw, that building would burn. It's exactly what they want. It's not my mission. I'm not going to let that happen. That is the seat of justice in downtown Portland, and we need to protect that. We need to make sure that folks understand that we can disagree. We can have a civil debate, and we can do that peacefully, and we can do that night after night after night. But once you cross the line and you become violent, that's when we're going to step in. We're going to protect our facilities and our law enforcement officers.
Well, Mr. Secretary, we're going to have to leave it there, but I would add that I think if you withdraw, it spreads to other cities. Thanks so much for joining us. Folks, don't go away. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. Consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Absent fathers, distracted fathers, and angry fathers have created a vacuum of the soul in the lives of many children. Pornography is epidemic, affecting the male brain, isolating his heart, and degrading women who long to be cherished. Confusion and even skepticism about marriage run rampant, especially in our younger generations. Selfishness among men has led to broken homes and a trail littered with broken hearts, including their own. Where can you turn to find the solutions to these problems? Leadership and Love, A Tale of Two Fathers, is a new publication from Family Research Council that takes a look at two men, Joshua and the father of the prodigal son, as strong examples of leadership and love. It also weaves in an understanding of attachment science to underscore the needs of children, which need to be met to become emotionally healthy and spiritually strong. Visit frc.org/fathers to learn more.
In today's culture, it can be difficult for men to navigate what it means to be a man and to find clear models of masculinity and manhood. There are many competing ideas out there and even confusion around the basic concepts of gender and sex. Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join me at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day. These issues will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, and battle buddies so that men can have generational influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Join us at one of our upcoming events in Texas, Louisiana, Florida, or Virginia. Learn more about Stand Courageous and find an event near you at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com. StandCourageous.com. This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter or Parler, it's at T Perkins. And again, I want to thank all of those who participated in yesterday's poll question about committing to protest for this country, to pray, to vote, and to stand. One of the highest performing polls to date. I have a poll question for you today based upon what we just heard from the secretary and what we're about to hear from the former mayor of Cincinnati. This is the poll question for Dave. In fact, if you want to go ahead and text radio, the word radio, to 53445. That's 53445. You should just put that into your phone. Text radio to 53445. I'll send you the link. We want to know what you think. What do you think is motivating the lawlessness and violence in the streets of major U.S. cities? Is it police brutality? Is it boredom and the coronavirus? Is it efforts to undermine the republic? A combination of the above? You're not sure. Take the poll. Text radio to 53445. All right. Do Black Lives Matter to Black Lives Matter? My next guest, the former mayor of Cincinnati, says the evidence would suggest Black lives only matter when there is political benefit. Ken Blackwell, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's good to be with you.
So what is the goal of Black Lives Matter as an organization? Is it black lives, or is there something else that they're really after?
Their goal is to fundamentally transform America. They think that America is irreparably damaged and can only be bettered by completely being destroyed. Look, if Black Lives Matter, if you take a look at the 7 years that that organization has been around, they've raised over $1 billion. They haven't had one neighborhood cleanup, sent one poor black child to college, bought school supplies, fed the hungry, or donated to a food bank, or provided housing to one black poor family. Yeah, this is an organization dedicated to America's destruction, it's an organization led by self-defined Marxists.
Right.
And so it's pretty clear.
Well, you're right. In a 2015 interview, the organizers, Garza and Colors, said, quote, myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We're trained Marxists. And they've been, some of them have been hanging out with Maduro down in Venezuela. And then you look at what statements have been made from, like, the leader in New York, the president of the Greater New York Black Lives Matter. He said, you know, we're going to burn this system down. And he was on an interview with Fox, and this is what he said. I just want black liberation and black sovereignty by any means necessary. Should we believe him?
Tony, look, you know, I've crisscrossed the globe, and I've studied world history. And if you take a look at what has been the practice of tyrants, you understand that Black Lives Matter is an organization at the tip of the spear of the council culture. And tyrants and authoritarians and Marxists have basically throughout history tried to destroy cultures, whether it was Nazis who stole countless and billions of dollars in art and historical and religious treasures from Jewish families to eliminate Jewish culture, whether it was the Taliban that destroyed ancient Buddha statues. ISIS destroyed the statues and other irreplaceable artifacts.
Right.
You know, this Black Lives Matter is part of a totalitarian Marxist force in this country that has taken a title, you know, a label that is aspirational, but they've in fact used it as cover for their march toward destroying American culture. They want to cancel out.
This is not your commentary on them. This is based upon what they have said and stated. I mean, when you look at what you go to their website, you look at their list of demands. One of them is they proclaim, quote, "We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages." We've heard that term before, that collectively care for one another. I mean, you've not nailed this. When you look at what's happening in the black community, it's the destruction of the family, and they want to accelerate it.
Oh, absolutely. And, Tony, look, the greatest challenge we face in the 244th year of our Constitutional Republic is, do we have the moral courage and political will to check an ever-increasing capacity for self-destruction when we stand on the sidelines and we let these people march towards the destruction of our country?
So, Ken Blackwell, why are corporations and even pastors, you know, putting up the Black Lives Matter banner and marching under that banner, knowing that they want to destroy the nuclear family? They also partner with the Movement for Black Lives, which calls for abolishing all police, all prisons. And, I mean, they want to retroactively decriminalize, immediately release, and record expungement of all drug-related offenses and prostitutions, and reparations for the devastating impact of the war on drugs and criminalization of prostitution. These are their words.
Their words, and anybody that buys into it has to be, let me be charitable, stuck on stupid.
This is dangerous, and what's happening is that this combined with the cancel culture, people are afraid, and so they're stepping back. And I believe this is, of course, it was an opportunistic time when what happened with George Floyd, which was a tragedy, but they seized the moment because they were ready, and it coincides with an election. And I believe there's going to be an all-out intimidation to try to keep people from voting and pushing back against this agenda.
You're absolutely right, Tony. Look, we have a choice, a fundamental choice, and we're seeing it played out in Chicago, in Detroit, in Portland. Do we choose to be a nation of cities that are fields of dreams for our children, or do we, in fact, surrender to these idiots and, in fact, watch our cities become killing fields?
Well, we're seeing it unfold. It's time to stand up. Ken Blackwell, thanks so much for sounding the alarm all across America.
Thank you, Tony. Good to be
and with folks, you. Coming up next, we're going to talk with a man who is trying to sound the alarm as well, but the social media giants, they don't want you to hear it. They're censoring the message. Larry Taunton joins me next with a look at the Marxist agenda behind these groups. That's next here on Washington Watch.
Do Christians have a biblical obligation to participate in government? Do Christians have a duty to vote? And if so, what principles should inform them while casting their ballots? How should pastors think about politics, and how can they shepherd their congregations well during an election season? The gospel of Jesus Christ has implications for all areas of our life, including politics. Christians must be prepared to grapple with the moral issues of our day, the reality of our two-party system, and follow our Christian convictions to their logical end by voting for candidates that support clear biblical values. Family Research Council has partnered with 21 state family policy councils for a new edition of Biblical Principles for Political Engagement. This booklet provides biblical wisdom and clear answers to pivotal questions to help you navigate the political landscape. This publication exists to facilitate careful thinking about issues and encourage God-honoring political engagement that filters all issues and candidates through a biblical worldview. To read the full publication, visit frc.org/engage.
Not so long ago, sex education in public schools involved learning about human growth and development and listening to advice on how to be careful, respect others, and save sex for marriage. Things are very different today. Parents have two main concerns about sex ed: that it sexualizes children and that it's loaded with LGBTQ indoctrination. Family Research Council has released a new resource to address this issue titled Sex Education in Public Schools: Sexualization of Children and LGBT Indoctrination. This resource reveals troubling examples of the agenda-driven content being pushed in modern sex ed and exposes the powerful organizations behind it all. Finally, it offers some action steps for parents to consider in their fight to protect the health and innocence of their children. For more information about sex education in public schools and to view this resource, visit frc.org/sexeducation. That's frc.org/sexeducation.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, I want to get right into this interview. It flows right in line with what we've been talking about today, the violence in Portland, Black Lives Matter, and the agenda behind them. But the media giants, the social media giants like Twitter and Facebook, I'm becoming increasingly concerned. I've been concerned, but increasingly concerned that we cannot have a discussion about what is behind this agenda, calling it out. And my next guest basically dissected the Black Lives Matter, Antifa, and the violence that, you know, many are scratching and say, what's this is strange. What's happening? Well, this is not by accident. There is an agenda behind this, and it's well organized. We heard this from the Secretary of Homeland Security. It's organized. We heard it yesterday from a reporter on the ground. It's organized. But connecting the dots apparently is, that's too far for Twitter and Facebook. My next guest, Larry Alex Taunton, executive director of the Fixed Point Foundation and freelance columnist and author of The Grace Effect, wrote recently a piece about the Marxist ideology that is driving the anarchist behavior. Larry, welcome to Washington Watch.
It's great to be with you, Tony.
So, Larry, I read many of your pieces and agree with you 100% with what we see, what's unfolding. And I do think that if you know Rules for Radicals, Solonsky, that's what's unfolding right now. So let's just start with this. I want it from your lips to the listener's ears. What's behind the violence that is unfolding in cities like Portland?
Sure. You know, I think the average American looks at this, Tony, and they originally thought, I think many taking them for their own word, that this was about George Floyd. This was about police brutality. This was about racial inequality. But then as things start to move along, you begin to see attacks on courthouses and federal buildings and private property and smashing and looting. And then statues of abolitionists and others being toppled, and people began scratching their heads and wondering, what is this all about? And so I wrote a piece called, at first it was a lecture that I gave, a keynote address titled Understanding What is Happening in America, and I turned it into a column that your listeners can find on my website at LarryAlexTaunton.com. But basically what I'm saying there, Tony, is they are following a Marxist agitator's playbook written by Solonsky, as you mentioned, called Rules for Radicals.
And they're doing it pretty well, and they're intimidating people, and they're causing people to step back and give them free rein. But
Larry, lots of money.
Well, from corporate boardrooms to even pastors who are standing up and giving their support. But you also point to this idea. They're playing on a sense of guilt that we really shouldn't have as Christians
in
America.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, I have a book coming out this fall called Around the World in More Than 80 Days, Discovering What Makes America Great and Why We Have to Save It. And, you know, in going to some 55 countries, Tony, I basically took the left seriously at their claim that America is a terrible place, that there's such inequality, that it's a horrible place to live. And yet, you know, much of the world wants to come to the United States. And what you discover is what I refer to as, you made mention of my book by the same title, The Grace Effect. And what I mean by that little term I coined, is a way of saying that any culture that has been touched by a significant presence of Christians in it, it changes that culture. And grace goes out to affect both believer and unbeliever alike. And to make some comparison here to what we're talking about, you know, does America have sins? For sure. But take a country like Germany. There are generations of Germans that had absolutely nothing to do with the Holocaust who can't seem to move past it. And it's paralyzed them so that their guilt is used against them, and where they're not capable of making sound moral judgments. But America has always been very different. We've been able to move on from our past sins, and that's not because we are an inherently good people, but because we have found goodness in the goodness of God, and thus we found healing in our Christian core and our beliefs.
Is that why the Christian faith is being marginalized, so that America will not have the strength of that grace?
I think that it's even bigger than that, Tony. I think the American patriotism is rooted in a Judeo-Christian worldview. You know, we fire our fireworks and we sing our national anthem with great emotion, and we love our national heroes, and we love our Judeo-Christian roots, our founding, which we find in the Declaration of Independence with statements like, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. And among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, that is the core. That is the foundation of our law. It's from which everything good in our culture springs. We are rooted in eternity with a statement like that. The left knows they have to demolish it. And it is because Christians, by their nature, are rebels. They don't acknowledge the state is supreme. And you see, what socialism is it's an anti-theology. It seeks to replace God with government. And where you know, Americans have traditionally seen government as a temporal institution meant to serve man, they see it as exactly the opposite.
And to be restrained. Larry, we're out of time, but this is a conversation I want to continue. We're going to have you back on again real soon to have a longer conversation. Thanks so much for joining us.
Delighted to do it, Tony. Take care. Bye-bye.
Larry Alex Taunton. To find more about his piece, go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, social media censoring doctors wanting to talk about the coronavirus. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Could you use some timely and original commentary to read this summer, specifically on the issues facing our culture today? FRCblog.com has just what you're looking for. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, members of the Family Research Council team, as well as outside contributors. You can learn about religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Check out this list of a few of our most recent titles. What Does It Mean to Be a Woman? DC Christians Take to the Streets to Sing, Lament, and Pray, and Prayerfully Responding to Civil Unrest. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and stand for truth. Our blog helps you do just that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at frcblog.com. www.ukraineinstitute.com. On April 16th, President Trump and the White House Coronavirus Task Force announced a three-phase plan with guidelines for how states can begin scaling back restrictions. Churches should begin putting in place plans to reopen and operate their ministries according to the guidance of the Centers for Disease Control as state officials begin lifting orders. Here at Family Research Council, we have summarized the White House three-phase plan and how it relates to in-person church meetings and gatherings. Check out our resource, What Pastors Should Know About the White House Plan to Open Up America Again. Our resource offers practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate safely as our country reopens. Visit frc.org/church guidelines to view this resource and learn more. There, you'll also find our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus. Again, that's frc.org/church guidelines.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. So glad to have you. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And let me remind you, men, stand courageous. We're having our next conference. This one's a little different because you don't have to be there in person. With many people not able to attend, we had to cancel a number of our conferences, men's conferences, this summer. So we're going to be live streaming from Baton Rouge, Louisiana on August the 15th. You can be a part of it. In fact, your church could host a small group. You could do one in your home. You can watch it individually. Find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, let me also remind you, take the poll question for today. Text radio, the word radio, to 53445. I want to know what you think. What do you think is motivating the lawlessness and violence in the streets of major U.S. cities? Take the poll question, text radio to 53445. All right, in our previous segment, we talked about the political censorship imposed by social media giants in the coverage of the Portland riots and kind of what's behind all of this lawlessness. But that censorship is expanding into the medical field. It's already been there, but yesterday was a blatant example. I was invited to attend a meeting on Capitol Hill. I couldn't be there. But it was a meeting of doctors holding a press conference about the coronavirus. In fact, it exploded across social media, about 17 million views, I think. But Facebook, Google, YouTube, Twitter all began to limit the access to the video. Why? We're joining me now to talk about this is Dr. Taryn Clark, one of the doctors who participated in yesterday's event. Dr. Clark, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
So why the interest? I mean, 17 million views. It was the top performing video on Facebook. What's the interest here?
Well, people are desperate for real information about this virus. You know, numbers are starting to look like they don't add up. People are living in fear. There have been a lot of deaths, but recently more of the people who have gotten or tested positive with this have not had symptoms. They've been younger, healthier, and recovered more quickly. So I think there is really a curiosity in our society of, well, it's not looking like in my community like it's supposed to look and like it looks on the news. So what's
right.
the story here?
I think that's so true.
We're just desperate for answers.
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I've just recovered from the coronavirus. It was not the death warrant that you know some would have you make it out to be. My daughter, who is an ER nurse, been working in the COVID unit since it began, and she says one of the biggest things that happens is people come in, they're fearful, and as soon as they test positive, they ask if they're going to die because of the media message that has been out there. So that being the case, people want information, people need information. We know now there's enough data that's being compiled that it's not what we first thought it was. Still bad. Why the censorship of the information?
I wish I had an answer. I mean, it was shocking. I mean, first of all, I was surprised that we got so much attention because our intention with coming here was, you know, we're hearing from a lot of policy physicians and, you know, America needs to get the message from their doctor. And if their doctor isn't keeping up on the literature, which is just coming down in dumps, there's so much of it. You know, we wanted to speak directly to people to say, talk to your doctor about this. Here's what we're seeing on the front lines. So we were, first of all, surprised that there was so much attention. Immediately, we had, as you said, just millions and millions of viewers. And then we were equally surprised when we woke up and all of it had been taken down. Actually, the website that was set up for this conference about a week ago has also been taken down by the web hosting service. And what was posted there was just that this conference was happening, and then links to all the studies that have been done on hydroxychloroquine early in the disease. Zinc. There were also links to, for example, an NIH research paper from 2005 showing that chloroquine, which is related to hydroxychloroquine, was effective in SARS-CoV-1. And so, you know, that's interesting because SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2 are about 78% to 80% similar in their RNA. So I don't know how it's controversial that we're looking at an NIH paper when at the time Anthony Fauci was at the NIH in 2005. So, you know, to make it seem like it's controversial, and we still see the media saying, the mainstream media saying, you know, it's not been shown to work. It's shown to be dangerous.
But Dr. Clark,
it's dangerous.
Dr. Clark, all of you that were there yesterday are those that have been front lines. That describes who you've been working on this. It's not like you're a group of quacks that just want to get media attention. You've actually been working with patients. You've seen them recover. You've treated them. I thought medical science was about science and discovering the facts.
I thought so, too. And I really thought that, you know, once the facts were out there, this was self-correct. And that became evident maybe a little over a month ago that the facts weren't being ignored. And, you know, we've never seen studies that were done with in these huge journals, Lancet, New England Journal, highly respected. They're some of the best medical journals in the world that rapidly publish things. I don't know what broke down in the peer review process, but it was shown that the data was actually fraudulent. There was no real data it was based on. It came from a third-party company that couldn't verify it, and the studies were retracted. That never, I mean, I don't remember in my career that happening. So it just seemed like, well, those were the studies that showed it was unsafe. There's another one where they used toxic doses of the medicine, and not surprisingly, at toxic doses, the medicine is toxic. So it really is safe. I mean, I was referring people today to the CDC's own website. And if people go to the CDC website and look at malaria prophylaxis, hydroxychloroquine, there's a whole two-page fact sheet, and they list the side effects, you know, nausea, diarrhea, and we do see that. It does cause stomach upset. They mention nothing on there in these prophylactic doses, which is what's recommended in COVID, of, you know, heart concerns, you need to get an EKG first. I mean, you'd be very, very reassured reading about this medication on the CDC's own website, and yet we're being vilified and our information being taken down because we're suggesting, you know, that this is an option. And the mechanism of action of this drug we've known for 60 years or so. I mean, this drug has been around a really long time. And so we know how it stops things from getting in the cells. We know how it blocks the replication of foreign invaders that get in the cells. So it's not a mystery. It's not unsafe. It's effective when we use it early with zinc. It's not effective late or without zinc. So, you know, cherry-picking the data and the studies as they have been and still continuing to just say not effective, not safe, that's not true.
So, Dr. Clark, I know I'm going to ask you a question that's outside your professional field of training. You're a medical doctor, mm-hmm. and you're dealing with the coronavirus, but you said you've never seen anything like this, even when it comes to the professional journals. I mean, could it be that there is a political agenda behind the coronavirus and some people just don't want it solved?
I mean, I don't want to believe that, but in trying to find evidence to support that that's not the case, I'm not coming up with much. And I think that silencing us, I mean, I don't know how it could be seen that what we're saying is dangerous. Why would that be dangerous? Well, a group of under 20 physicians that came on the trip, there are a lot of us at home that couldn't take the time off and fly here and spend the time. But, you know, we're across multiple specialties. We don't have a dog in the fight. We have nothing financially to gain from this. I actually don't want the media attention. That's my preference would be to just be a little quiet physician doing my thing like sure. I usually do. So, you know, we're motivated because we want to help people. And we want to get through what some of the medical boards are doing with physicians, what they're doing with this medication, pharmacists refusing to fill the prescriptions. I've never been questioned about a prescription. I mean, I could much easier write a prescription for probably like a crazy amount of opioids and get less pushback than I get on this, you know, for 20 tablets of this medicine. It's a very small dose. It's not dangerous. And that's also unprecedented. Often use medications off-label. We use medications even against some warnings because we don't have any other options. And we explain that to patients and they understand it. We still don't get calls, you know. So generally the pharmacists understand that we make these difficult decisions with our patients. But in this case, it's very unusual behavior. In the medical community, in the medical board's been weaponized against physicians. They're afraid to speak out. It's part of the reason it's hard to get people to come on camera because you see what's happening to us on the web.
Disturbing.
It's a crazy time.
It is, yes, disturbing. It is. Well, thank you for being willing to participate and publicly talk about your experience with the coronavirus as a physician. And thanks for coming on today to Washington Watch.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Absolutely. Dr. Taryn Clark. And by the way, I'd mentioned that the rationale that Facebook gave for removing this video, which 17 million people had watched, was that they use as their standard the World Health Organization. And so they basically, their myth-busting organization is the World Health Organization, which the U.S. is moving to defund. The president was defunding it because they provided the cover to China, giving them time to try to cover their tracks. In the meanwhile, the virus spread globally. And I thank the Chinese for the fact that I spent 2 weeks with the coronavirus. Well, join me now to talk about the latest wave of relief coming from Washington, D.C. as it pertains to the coronavirus. The next relief bill that's being worked on is one of the members that's leading the charge in the Senate, Oklahoma Senator James Lankford. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, always good to be with you.
Well, give us the update. I know there's been a lot of talk about what's going to be in this next relief bill, who it's going to help and how it's going to help. Give us the details.
Yeah, there is still a lot of talk. It's an unsettled issue at this point. But Republicans, different committee chairmen all submitted different aspects of it. Those were all combined into one set of ideas. The White House is now engaging in this set of ideas. It's been brought by Senate committee chairmen. And trying to be able to tweak some of those things out and sit down with Speaker Pelosi to try to get to resolution. As you know, you're going to pass a bill and make law. You've got to do the House, the Senate, and the White House have all got to agree on it. So the Senate proposal has additional economic impact payments back to Americans of lower income to be able to try to help subsidize some of their time period right now dealing with rent and through food. And there's a lot of vulnerable folks that are out there. It does an extension of the Paycheck Protection Program. There's about $130 billion that are still left in that program. So it does some additional redefinition. That's been exceptionally helpful. It also targets businesses that may need a second round if they're very, very vulnerable. So for instance, if there's 50%, if they've lost 50% of their revenue through this year, they'd be able to reapply for a second round. So it's the highest risk individuals. It has some incentives for schools to be able to reopen, that it gives some assistance to all schools just on a smaller portion, but a larger portion if the school actually physically reopens. Because obviously if a school doesn't reopen, they don't need as much help because they're not using transportation. They're not using all those other things. But if they do reopen, they're going to have some additional congressional requirements on this, so it allows some additional funding for this, additional funding for testing, additional funding for the virus vaccine, and then a whole segment on liability protections for businesses, for educational institutions. This has been one of the big things we've heard over and over again, that it's very hard to reopen because you're concerned about a very entrepreneurial attorney that will just sue everyone if you reopen and someone ends up with COVID-19 around the workplace or in your business or at your school. And so the challenge is, how do we reopen when the virus is out there? And the best way to be able to do that is provide some basic liability protections. If there's gross negligence from someone, obviously that's totally different. But basic liability protections need to be out there for our schools and places of business.
What about churches? Will they be included in that?
They would be, actually, because, again, this goes back to any employer, any entity in that sense, and we're trying to be able to have a federalizing the cause of action so that if there's gross negligence on something, for instance, if someone is known to have COVID-19 and yet they're still teaching a class and still engaged, obviously that's just negligence. If everyone right. knew that they were already injured, they know that's going to pass on the virus. That's very different than, hey, I was asymptomatic, there's no way I could know, and suddenly people have it around me. So we need to find ways to be able to protect each other, but we need to also be able to reopen in a way that we're not afraid of lawsuits the whole time.
Senator Lankford, on the education front, the president has talked about this. I know one of your colleagues, Senator Lamar Alexander, and Tim Scott, working on this from an educational choice standpoint for those schools that don't open. Are parents going to have greater choice and latitude in education?
Yeah, one of the things we're trying to do is two things. One's the funds coming down to be able to also get to private education. This is not just geared towards public education. This is geared towards parents and families that need help in this, both with the educational environment. Whether it's public or private, that's the decision of a parent to be able to make. And so we're not precluding that. Some of the dollars would be set aside specifically for private education to be able to sustain those, but also give greater latitude to parents to be able to make choices in case their school is not open so that they have the opportunity to be able to do that. So, yes, this is something Tim Scott's led the way on. Lamar Alexander has been extremely engaged in this, and more details will roll out in the days ahead on that.
Good. That's a good move. Senator James Lankford, we're up against the end of the program. I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us this afternoon.
Glad to always do it. Thanks for what you're doing, Tony.
All right. Senator James Lankford of the Sooner State. Find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. Again, let me encourage you, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources there for you. And find out more about the Stand Courageous Men's Conference coming up August the 15th in Baton Rouge. But it's going to be live streamed, so you can participate no matter where you are. Put together a small group of men, host it at your church, do the social distancing, wear mask, whatever you want to do. But you can participate, and you won't miss a Stand Courageous conference. Go to TonyPerkins.com and find out more. And final point, take the poll. I want to know what you think. What is motivating the lawlessness and violence in the streets of major U.S. cities? Text the word radio to 53445 and participate in today's poll question. Thanks so much for joining us, folks. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6. Where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, you got it. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.